As the first speaker pointed out, the subject of our lecture today is fear and fearlessness. Truly, the world that we live in, especially at least some parts of the world, people are living constantly under the threat of being harmed, dying, destruction, and so it is in a constant state of fear. Either it is war or violence, or it is criminality or natural disaster. Life is so unpredictable that it really gives rise to some kind of fear. And this fear, in a way, if we trace theosophically, has been a companion of a human being right from his childhood. A child is afraid of certain things. And to make it worse, we find that sometimes poor child is made to fear. And HPB is drawing a special attention towards this instilled fear. She says that it's quite common if the child continues to cry, or if he's adamant and he wants ice cream, or he wants a particular toy, something, and then he wouldn't leave that. So if it is Aya, nurse, or even parent, they would kind of bring him from there by instilling fear. They'll say, and this we have all heard, see, the boogeyman will come, or there is a kind of a devil standing in the corner. And of course, in our colloquial vernacular language, as children, we have heard Bawa Ausen Alai Jase. And we were very afraid of whoever is that Bawa who is going to come and take us away. So, some or the other way. Now, we may feel that, of course, as the child grows up, it's all going to be generally washed away. But HPB says that at that tender age, sometimes it leaves a very deep impression of fear in the child. And then, you don't know. It is there, hiding somewhere in your constitution, inner consciousness. And she says that the secret drawer opens only once, maybe twice, all through the life, and then at the age of 20, 30, 40, 50, that is many years later, suddenly the person is in some kind of peculiar circumstances where this fear, which was instilled during childhood, surfaces and the person goes insane. This is something which I think no ayabai or no parent knows, that the child was merely reprimanded and then the fear was instilled, if you don't do this, this will happen. But this can happen. Now, moving over from that fear, which actually is our companion from childhood, as we grow up, some or the other kind of fear is with us. And especially you do find that psychology is really struggling with various kinds of phobias. We have all the time with us people who talk about these psychological phobias. So they are very afraid of heights. The moment they go on 12th or 15th floor, and if they look down, they feel giddy and they are very, very afraid. Or there is this fear of closed spaces. You are in a closed room, and what is called as a claustrophobia, the fear of closed space. Similarly, there is a fear of darkness. There are typical kind of phobias which are there, which you may trace back to your early childhood, but most of the time you are able to not trace it back because it is something which is linked to your past life. Often we hear about it, and in fact we are even told somewhere that supposing in one life a person has, as it were, been burnt in a fire. Your house caught fire, your office caught fire, you got burnt completely and died. Now what few moments that the person would have gone through, it's a very deep fear, first of all. And secondly, every atom and molecule of your body has been impressed with that experience. And therefore, In some life, maybe the immediately next life or any other life, we do talk about Rupa Skandhas, the Skandhas which form and give us a form. These impressions come back. Those atoms and molecules come back to form a new body. They are given this impression. And there you do find that that person will have instinctive fear of fire. Instinctive fear. It's just there, inbuilt in him. He's afraid of fire. Go a step further, and sometimes this could be a, such a deep-seated experience that it can turn into a kind of a malady. So, somewhere in an article which is on the past life regression, the student came across this thing which we have shared before with you, that a certain girl had a phobia for water. You turn on the tap and she will scream. Then of course she goes to a past life regression therapist, and she has been regressed through hypnotism or whatever. And then comes a point where the girl, as it were, finds that in a certain life there was this sister of hers and her lover who have gone to seashore or maybe near the river, and the lover pushes her in the water and she drowns, gets drowned and dies. She died then. The girl has been watching all this from standing behind a tree. She has watched this. And now, this is something which is again a very deep-seated experience, so it's brought back. And now in this life, she has fear of water. Not only the other sister who might have died in that manner, but she has watched and she has terrific fear of water. And so of course the past life regression, whoever is doing, is putting suggestions, and she's brought out of it. Of course, theosophy would say that someday she will have to fight with the fear and overcome it herself. Hypnotism and hypnotic suggestions will only temporarily bring her out. So there are fears and fears, and this is a very peculiar kind which very few people can deal with. Whatever is the fear, we have to overcome. Sometimes by meeting it headlong, head on as it were, and say, come what may, I'm not going to be afraid. Some others, there are some other ways of dealing with it. If we look at some of these fears, you have fear of public opinion. I think there must be rarely a person who is not afraid of what will people say. At some time in life, somewhere, as they say, sabse bada rog kya kahenge log, we are worried about society. What will they say? Sometimes women unnecessarily suffer. Domestic violence, husband comes home every day, drunk, beats her, very pathetic situation. But she will not open her mouth, and especially this used to be the case in the earlier days, now it's not so much. She will not, because she is worried what will society say. They will all gossip, they will all talk about me, and there is a reputation at stake and things like that. So, the fear of public opinion. Sometimes you find that this fear of public opinion is a positive thing. It is something which actually holds the person back from doing something which is not really morally correct. We do see. And our times, of course, that fear is slowly going away for some reason. But the earlier times, you know, people would think many times before having extramarital affair. Live-in relationship was not even heard of. And I think those who point at which it started, there would have been some fear as to what will society say. You are feeling something about the opinion of others. So, this fear of public opinion is there. And then there is also the fear of being isolated. We generally like to be with the majority. This is a very deep psychology, and therefore a psychoanalyst is bringing it out, Eric Fromm. He's written a whole book called Fear of Freedom. It's not about doing something immoral. Even otherwise, she is, seems to be hinting that there is a herd instinct. What the majority is doing, we like to do that. What kind of career we choose, what is in vogue, what is the in thing, the clothes we wear, the food we eat, the way we behave, the words we use, the etiquette, all that is what is done by the majority. And therefore, at one point in time, it was looked down upon if a woman was taking to dancing or becoming actress or something like that, it was not really acceptable. Then comes a time, it's a something which is really valued and people look up to, people try to imitate. So more and more girls, more and more boys are taking to sports, acting, modeling. What is it? It's a majority which is giving the sanction. There is no other yardstick to really find out that this is this morally or otherwise correct or not. So we are going with the herd, so much so that our career also is chosen like that. Have we really chosen it? And the author says, not really. What you have chosen, you were really made to choose because you are influenced by the majority. Why do I want to take commerce? Not because I love the subjects, but I want to become a chartered accountant. Everybody is doing that, and also I can get money. So we are able to see that here also. In a very different way, the fear of isolation, the fear of being signaled out, the fear of being different, that is what really makes us follow a kind of a herd instinct. Now, we do find that there is also a great fear of rejection, and there is also a fear of losing a possession, and fear of really losing what we have achieved or acquired. And in that category, many things come. Our possessions, our money, our property, many, many things, along with name, fame, power, position. We have acquired it over a period of time. And we are very afraid of losing that. Retirement time comes closer and people start inwardly feeling very, very insecure. Some, as soon as they retire, they pass away. Something happens internally. It's not money. It's something about holding on to what I had. Also, sometimes you are holding a position. People looked up to you. You are revered. People consulted you. What a job, I mean, what a life it was. And now you become a non-entity as soon as you step down from the position. This is not so easy to take. So there is a fear of losing, not just monetarily, money or possessions in that sense, but name, fame, power and position. Many people will admit that there is that internal fear and insecurity which is there when one has to step down from the position, and especially if it was a very high position. There is also this fear when it is a fear of losing your life or losing the life of a loved one. This is, of course, the greatest fear, the fear of loss. And here we are able to see that the antidote, our reading especially, was taken to really cover all these categories, whether it is money, whether it is power, position, fame, name. Where lies the hitch? The hitch lies in our not recognizing soon enough. Why is it that in one of the chapters, Buddha has to say, in the chapter on old age, that your life and the years are passing away and you have not collected soul wealth, so that the time will come when you, like an old crane who pines away in a lake without fish, you will pine away. There is the time as we are moving towards old age, when we are moving towards retirement, when we are moving towards the time when things will go out of our hand. When are we going to prepare ourselves for this certainty that things are not going to remain with us forever, that people are not going to remain with us forever. This is the greatest reality of life. And we live as if everything is, as it were, amar, constant, permanent. That's the way we live life. And that's where Buddha in this reading of today says that there are three lakshanas of our conditioned existence. Three lakshanas. What are they? Impermanent are all conditioned things. Everything is subject to change. I mean, we see this. Our own bodies have changed from childhood to young to adult to old. If you keep something for a long time, a bhaji or something, it gets rotten, decays and it's gone. There are sturdy looking things which just break and you wonder how it broke. We have been seeing this constant change, demolition, destruction. So impermanent are all conditioned things. Also, full of pain are all conditioned things. Sabbe dhamma anitya, sabbe dhamma dukkha, sabbe dhamma anatma. Devoid of true selfhood are all conditioned things. So, this is not internalized. We've been speaking. We are aware. We've been watching. As they say, people go to, as it were, funeral ceremonies. They come back and start living as if it is not applicable to them. So we call that Smashan Vairagya. It is temporary detachment which comes. Overnight you feel 2 days, 5 days, 10 days. We are back to what we were. What did we get? Did we change our life? Did we really try to get an insight into it? No. So the other thing which Buddha also is saying is about, from attachment arises grief, from attachment arises fear. From craving arises grief, from craving arises fear. And also, it is from affection arises grief and from affection arises fear. All of this attachment, affection, desire, there is finally going to be fear. Come to the example given by Sangharakshita. This is a very apt example, applies to all of us. We may have passed that stage, but at one time we were also in the race, we were also in the competition, and he says that a hawk finds a very juicy piece of meat, and now he thinks, leisurely I'll fly, sit in a secure place and enjoy that piece of meat. So as he begins to fly and settle somewhere, soon he finds there are so many hawks pursuing him to snatch it away from him. This is what happens. We are in the career. We are in schools and colleges. Each one is ambitious. Each one is competitive. Each one is wanting to get the first place, the highest place, the best thing. And so we are trying to climb the ladder of success. And there are always people ready to pull your leg, to bring you down, to go above you, and so on. This constantly happens. This is something which we need to learn, that there will be somebody who will envy you and want to take your place. It's all impermanent. And that's how that same light on the path is telling us that consider this whole existence as a scene which you see in the kaleidoscope. As children we used to play with that thing, you know, where you have some very glass pieces, colorful pieces of bangles. When it breaks, we used to just put them inside, then there would be a glass behind, and then from inside we will see, and those glass pieces will arrange themselves. Sometimes very nice pattern will come, sometimes some other pattern will come. Some very especially nice pattern comes, we want to have it for a long time, or just hold it forever. It's a beautiful pattern. Can it happen? A slight jerk of the hand, the pattern is gone. And no matter how hard you try in a kaleidoscope, you can't bring it back. This is the thing. The impermanence, the change, It's a constant change. Things are constantly changing. And therefore, to overcome this fear of losing something, which may be something inanimate, material possessions or fame, name, or it may be your own loved ones. To overcome that, we need to really know that things are impermanent. And we need to also cultivate what is called as detached attachment. It's a mighty word. And it is very difficult. We all know that. This detached attachment. Either we are completely attached and we are so lost in it, whether it is a party we are enjoying or the fame and name we are enjoying, we become that. Our whole existence, that for days on end we keep reliving that experience of what we have achieved. So the detachment, which is not that you are not going to enjoy anything, enjoy in such a way that one aspect of you becomes a drashta and another aspect enjoys it. So that there is an observer who says, okay, fine, it was good. Good that I got this position. Good that I could go to the party. Good that this happened. But once you come out of it, you should completely be detached from it. So enjoy while it is there, but don't hanker after it. Don't want to repeat that pleasure again and again. When this is a situation, I mean, if we can bring this situation, that will be good. And it's very difficult. Just recently someone sent that WhatsApp message. I think it's very eye-opening. It just says that after teaching before war, 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, Arjuna, the battle starts and he loses his son, Abhimanyu. And Arjuna cries. And it said Krishna also cries. Now Krishna doesn't cry because Arjuna is crying and he has lost his son. Krishna is crying that look at this. I have told him all 18 chapters I have explained and still he has not achieved detachment. It just shows that it's easier said than done. But when are we going to do it then? We will have to start now, wherever we are. We won't wait for something to happen. And yet, it's not something that we will do it consciously. As HPB herself says, these attachments, these desires, first for the material things, then for immaterial things like name, fame, power, position, and then about love. Giving love, being able to receive love, it goes in this hierarchy. And you will find that this kind of things, to be detached, is not something which you will willfully do. Life is a great teacher. And you will find that life will bring such experiences that gradually it will fall off. Like the mustard seed put on the point of an awl. Try putting a mustard seed on the point of a needle, it will simply fall down immediately. This kind of inner detachment will come when you have series of experiences of loss and gain that inwardly, even without your knowledge, you will become detached. So, only thing is that we question every experience. We try to see what do I have to learn from it. And it is only then that gradually this correct kind of detached attachment comes. Side by side with that, there is also the understanding which is required. What is that understanding? The understanding of who I am. It sounds very philosophical, but it is not. Too much attachment to the body, decorating the body. If I find myself doing it, my eyes should open one day. Too much attachment to, say, the power of speech, emotions, and again, I should question myself. If you watch, you find that the body changes, the mind changes, the ideas change, the emotions change. As Mr. Crosby is pointing out, that if you just go through this exercise and see, you will find that in past, I had different ideas, I had different experiences, I had different emotions. All of it is changed, and in the present, I am having different ideas, emotions, experiences, and in the future, there will be something else. So all the conditions and things are changing, but who is observing them? That I am having these ideas, I am having this emotion, I am having... The I or the we which observes it is the same. It's a constant thread, the sutratma passing through the various beads of experiences. This is not to be repeated only from platform or at times when we read. It is to be internalized. And when we try to understand and distance ourselves from things which are fleeting in nature, and try more and more to ground ourselves in that center in us, somewhere in the reading, somewhere in Dhammapada we are told, that there is that center of peace and bliss within you that you should turn to, and that really requires meditation. So in the Bhagavad Gita, we are asked to do meditation on birth, death, decay, sickness and error. Meditation on death, meditation on decay, sickness, when we do that meditation, we understand that these are changing things. And then the shock is not there. We are in a way prepared beforehand to some extent to overcome this fear, the fear of losing our own body, the fear of losing our loved one. It is difficult, but some beginning will have to be made so that we are not all that shattered as we were when we had no knowledge. After all, fear, one of the reasons for fear is ignorance. The moment you have knowledge, the fear reduces. When I am up against a completely unknown machine, I am afraid to touch any button. And if there is a noise, I go 5 feet away. That's ignorance. But once I learn to operate, I am not afraid. Similarly, the experiences and realities of life, when we start acquainting ourselves and know what is real and what is unreal, that I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am not the ideas, and I am that. Let us meditate and become aware of it and start putting it into practice. If someone insults us for whatever, our speech, our looks, I am not my looks. I am not my knowledge. I am not my speech. When we start distancing away, start ourselves distancing away from these perishable things, the fear reduces. Another way of overcoming fear is what in the quotation we find Mr. Crosby saying. You live it out. Of course, on the one hand we are told that don't cross the bridge before you have arrived at it. But on the other hand, this is one of the methods. If you feel very afraid of something as to what the future holds, just think, if tomorrow I lost all my money? What tomorrow if I lose my reputation? Whatever it is, try to imagine, just like we are told, you know, by those people who are talking about positive thinking, imagine that you are, as they say, you know, the billionaire, and then you keep imagining, and then you work along that direction. Why not this? Imagine that you have lost your reputation, you are all alone, that you are, you know, going to meet with this or that calamity of which you are very afraid. So, Mr. Crosby, at one point in time when he came out of the Theosophical Society, he was all alone. Because people were not taking theosophy in the right direction and the work in the right direction, he thought that he can't continue the work without bringing the message as given by HPB and W.Q. Judge. And he had to wait. He had to undergo all kinds of blames and dishonor and things like that. And he is writing. The second quotation says, I used to look calmly and dispassionately at the very worst picture I could conjure up as happening to myself, and found it helpful in getting rid of fear of consequences. I mentally took account of the very worst, saw myself in it with all that it entailed, went through it in all its parts, leaving myself alone, dishonored, stripped of everything. Those very things have happened to me, but I knew them and went on undismayed. Had I not done it, I would not be where I am today. And we know, he could gather 7 other students and start United Lodge of Theosophists, but for him we would not have ULT today. And many other centers also came up. So living out your fear, facing it head on, is one way of overcoming fear. And there is another way, is to all the time be a person who remains in the company of his divine nature. This is an advice par excellence given by Mr. Jaj in his writings again and again. Every prompting from above, every warning which comes from your higher divine nature, you obey it at once. Sometimes it is very inconveniencing. You have work to do and you are supposed to visit. Your higher nature, inner nature says, go and visit the sick person in the hospital. Do it at once. If there is that kind of inner prompting comes to change certain habit, too long you have carried, change it at once. Don't wait for the new year to change it. These are some of these things which we are told. And we know there are people who are in the habit of constantly consulting this inner nature. It's not as if we will not ask our elders and our friends and those who are well-wishers. But is it not good to be self-reliant in this way? It's not easy. You can't overnight say, I am now in this trouble, so tell me what I should do. Yes, Krishna does say that. I am the goal, the comforter, the witness, the resting place, the asylum and the friend. Everything is He. But have we ever regarded this higher nature within as the goal and the comforter and the friend? No, we are looking here and there. We'll go and perform some ceremony or ritual, or we will go and consult some astrologer, or we'll do everything, and as a last resort, we will come to that Krishna. Very wittily, we have our Professor C.S. Lewis saying that we regard God as the airman regards his parachute. He is happy that it's there in case of emergency, but he sincerely hopes he will never have to use it. That's it. We sincerely hope we never have to turn within and ask. There are so many other avenues where we will try to resolve and get some easy solution. But if we have been doing it, tell me, what do I have to do? There are so many moral dilemmas in life. And rather than, of course you consult, but you do consult. Put this proposition, as Mr. Judge would say, before you go to sleep, before your higher nature, and then, sometimes as we are told, there are dreams in which you get your answer. And when you wake up, you know what you are supposed to do. This is possible. So there is a voice of conscience which always tells you, don't do this, don't go here, don't, in negative manner. And there is the inner voice, what we call a still small voice, that will give you a positive direction. And this consulting the inner voice is something useful. This is what will become then the voice of intuition. It will come as a flash. Possibly nobody else can guide you, there the inner voice will guide. You will intuitively know and be made to do something which may not sound all right to you, but that will be the right course of action. This is what will happen. And that can happen, as in Light on the Path we are told. This is told to a disciple who has seriously taken spiritual path, and he is told that he has to play the Lord over situation, over people, over society, save his own divinity. That he may turn, as it were, a deaf ear to everything but his own divinity. So, you may listen to others if you want, but ultimately, try to evaluate all the advice that you have got in the light of what your inner nature has to say. This is the way in which people slowly rise, and you find how these reformers have the courage to face hundreds and thousands of people. The whole society is against them. They take up things like child marriage, women can't be educated, widow remarriage they brought about, and you have a long line of reforms which were done, and what they went through must have been very terrible. That conservative society, and to bring about this reform, then what gave them courage? It is this inner thing. It didn't happen overnight. They were used to consulting. They were used to remaining in company with the higher nature. They were used to meditating and trying to make this connection with the higher nature. So at the end moment, it is available to them. And that's how you have. This is something which is very much required when we talk about religion. It's not as if we are being irreverent, but what is the stage of religion in HBB's time? It was Christianity, but in our time you find, and as she herself says, that all religions are true at the base, false on the surface, because they are overlaid with cobwebs of dogmas and rituals and some false ideas which are also being introduced. In that condition, who are we going to follow and how are we going to follow even scriptures? Even scriptures have been meddled with. We were just the other day seeing how the Sati Pratha came by making a change in the Rig Veda. Now, what to do then? So, it is at that time that it is good. Even the scriptures are not sacrosanct, and that is why Mr. Jack says that you read Bhagavad Gita in the light of the spiritual lamp which is within you, so that you are not caught in all kinds of different explanations. You get what your inner nature really is going to convey to you. It will take time, but it is worthwhile. And it is then only that one can be challenging in a way the authority which is a religious authority. We all remember in Christianity Saint Joan of Arc, and she was against the church dogmas and the kind of things which were introduced by church, Orthodox church fathers and all that. And then of course she has to stand before the bishop, and he says, you dare to put your judgment against that of the church? And she very calmly says, by what other judgment can I judge? Can I judge by any other judgment but my own judgment? Take it or leave it. That courage of conviction, of the inner judgment which was there, is to be found in all these reformers, especially the religious reformers. Also, this is one way that people become fearless, by learning to consult that inner nature. Another thing is harmlessness. It's very beautiful to see pictures, and it is unbelievable that a sage is sitting there, he's meditating, and he's surrounded by tigers, lions, chittas, and also you have a deer, and you have a rabbit, and you have a dog, all in harmony. No one is pouncing on the other to do anything. The harmlessness within him radiates and makes everything else harmless. As children and even as grown-ups, we have heard these stories, especially in the south of Gujarat and other places, even in Maharashtra. There are these decoys, hardened, ruthless, and some good karma brings them in contact with these saintly people. Is a saintly person afraid? He is a hardened criminal? No. He has this inner strength. This is what we call as a soul force. And he is able to, in fact, convert him. Such is that power of harmlessness radiating from him that the other person gets converted. And that brings us to the point of really having two kinds of fearlessness. The right kind of fearlessness and a wrong kind of fearlessness. Today also you find a hardened criminal is also fearless. He is absolutely fearless. You talk about Gandhiji's fearlessness and you talk about a dictator like
Hitler.
He was also fearless. Now, what is Hitler's fearlessness? It is rash boldness. In fact, that fearlessness also comes partly because you killed your conscience. You are not even little bit afraid of doing wrong. You go right ahead. Once you don't listen to the inner voice, second time you don't listen, third time, then as they used to say, like a gentleman, it will keep quiet unless you give time to speak. You killed it. And you just go on doing wrong after wrong after wrong. Rash boldness, arrogance. What about Gandhiji? He himself says, I think one or two Sundays back we saw how he used to undertake fast and people used to imitate and he used to say, this is not something which an ordinary person should undertake. First, you have to pass many years in practicing truth and non-violence. For a number of years I have practiced truth and non-violence and then I got that inner strength, which you can call as soul force, heart force. Beautiful story which Sri B.P. Wadia has given. It's an actual incident. It's called inner conversion of Tojo. It happened a few years back, that is many years back in fact, that there is this Colonel Tojo, Japanese dictator, and along with his ruthless troop of soldiers, they are held captive as prisoner of war. And there, the Buddhists had sway. They were in the prison. And one Buddhist monk says, you give me chance. Just 1 month. Every day, first of all, he was not afraid that these are the ruthless dictator and his soldiers who have done this all their life of killing people. Fearlessly he enters and fearlessly he starts giving the teachings of Buddha. In 1 month's time, he's converted them. It's not the conversion that we are doing and talking about, the religious conversion, the inner conversion. And it is said that yes, they had to be hanged, and each and every one of them went to the gallows with complete calmness and peace. What a wonderful strength, the inner strength. This is the inner strength which Gandhiji is talking about. And therefore, we must therefore touch upon the idea. Again, as Sri B.P. Wadia is saying, that there is the thunderbolt, Vajra of Indra. And that really spares no one. If you are in the wrong, then you are gone. That same thunderbolt or Vajra is the law of karma. And I think wise Solomon has said, fear of God is beginning of wisdom. Now if they say, what is this? Why should you be afraid of God? I am not afraid of anyone, not even God. That is foolishness. What God are we talking about? Is it the God in the temple? The God is law. Theosophy, we say, just Friday we were seeing that. God is law. What law? The law of karma. The working of the law of karma is impartial, just. And it is not going to do any kind of, you know, impartiality. And therefore be sure, if you do wrong, you will be punished. If you do right, you will be saved. It will pay hidden good and it will also punish hidden evil. So don't think that nobody knows about what I have done. Karma knows everything. It's an all-seeing law. So, here we are. Sri B.P. Wadia is saying that that thunderbolt is this law of karma. You may be very rash, you may be very bold, you may be very arrogant, you may be, as today they talk about, I don't care. It's my life, I can do anything. This false kind of independence. False kind of independence. And in the process, by your behavior, by what you do, you are bringing harm to other people. And here, of course, we are told that then the time comes when that vajra strikes the person and he is punished again and again and again till he leaves independence and recognizes interdependence. We are all interdependent. I can't do anything, just I think we saw. Even my thought is going to affect the whole humanity, good or bad. My emotion is going to affect the whole humanity. This may sound very, very far-fetched, but of course time will not permit. But people have done experiments and they are talking about Einstein's pain wave, that 1 lakh of animals were slaughtered. And they're crying, as it were. The shrieking, it's a pain wave created, which will affect the entire earth. If you can believe in those vibrations, why not in thought vibrations and feeling vibrations? So the interdependence has to be recognized. When you recognize that, then the law of karma have really nothing to punish you for. Because then you are going to behave on the path and move on the path of righteousness. Now here we find, in the beginning remarks, we were reminded that in the Gita, in the 16th chapter, you are given the characteristics of a person who is having a demoniacal nature and the person who is having a nature which is really godlike. Daivi Sampat, Asuri Sampat. And very interesting to reflect upon that in the Daivi Sampat, the very first quality mentioned is fearlessness. And what is the Sanskrit term? Abhaya. We would not have probably come to this conclusion, but Swami Sri Savitananji has brought the difference. It does make sense. He says there is a word nirbhay and there is a word abhay. Now for us it is the same. Nirbhay, abhay, both are fearless. But he says nirbhay means somebody was so far afraid. I was like a rabbit, timid. And then suddenly something happened. Maybe some experiences, maybe I built my body, maybe I got some knowledge. Some change came and I became nirbhay. That means I was afraid, but now I have become fearless. And I may again become the same. I may become someone who is afraid once again. But look at the word abhay, means he who knows no fear. So here is that nirbhay which is at a much lower level. The fearlessness in one field or the other, fearlessness maybe physically, mentally, emotionally, but this abhaya is a spiritual fearlessness. Who knows no fear? And how has that come? It has not come by merely having some experiences. That abhaya the person has become because he has realized, who am I? That I am not this body, this mind, this emotions, this personality. I am that. We say glibly, aham brahmosmi. We are far away from that. But to realize that I am verily the Brahman, and that Brahman is sitting in everything, and therefore there is no separateness between me and others. You see, there is that thing which says, the moment there is another, there is fear. Well, I am alone, I am not so afraid. Moment there is another, he can do anything to me. So the moment there is another, there is fear. Now there is no another. I and him, and I and my family, I and the society, I and the whole humanity are the same. We are not different from each other. This is what he has realized. The one who is having the quality of being abhaya. He knows no fear. How can he know fear? Because everything is Brahman. Are you going to be afraid of Brahman? This is the conviction he carries within him. So, there is nirbhaya, there is abhaya. So, finally, who is, in the ultimate sense, fearless? Someone who is selfless. Not only unselfish, he is selfless. So that his whole life is devoted to the service of humanity. He is self-sacrificing. He knows no distinction between him and others. This is the person who is going to be ultimately fearless. And to be fearless means not have some kind of a courage that we are talking about. It is a spiritual courage. A whole paramita in the voice of the silence is called virya. And that virya is not ordinary courage, it is spiritual courage. And we can begin to really tread that path, as we are told that by one, beginning to accept all that your karma brings you. It's not easy. No complaining, no murmuring, only trying to accept and say, my own has come back to me. It might be mighty suffering. It might be injustice. It might be anything. I cannot have it unless and until. My karma must be such that it has brought. And two, after reconciling, try to learn the lesson. Every time we do it, we are brought a step closer to the divine. And that is when, that stage comes when all that we have done is surrendering the personal will to the divine will. This is called prapatti by Vaishnava. Complete surrender. Not just have shashtang dandavat pranam in the temple. Inwardly surrendering. Throwing off all the weapons of offense and defense. No complaint, no murmur. No trying to dodge karma. That is when the strength which comes is what is called spiritual energy or spiritual force. Our time is run out, but we'll take one quick question if it is there.
In worldly affair, sometimes being fearless backfires. How to evaluate situation to be more practical? Is precaution called fear?
In worldly affairs, sometimes being fearless backfires. And how to really evaluate the situation? And is precaution fear? At our level, we have to, in fact, first have this inner judgment. That's why the need to consult your inner nature. And if you don't have that rapport, you will go wrong. I mean, what we are saying is you applies to us also. We can go wrong because discrimination is required. Remember somewhere HPB is saying, when in doubt, abstain. These are her exact words. When in doubt, abstain. When you are in doubt, please don't do anything. Now, it may be an act of commission or it may be an act of omission if you are not very sure. So, it is very important before we jump into something fearlessly to even help someone. Simple example generally is taken is that if someone is drowning and if you don't know swimming and you say, no, my heart goes out, and if I just jump into that river in order to save, both will get drowned. It's not as if we'll be able to save. So, do I have the necessary things in me? A senior student used to give example that there are people with guns and things like that. Or sometimes there are some, gunda-like people, they are harassing a girl. You have a child with you. Now, is it really wise that you leave the child and then you try to save her? They'll do something to your child. Now, these are tricky situations and it does require a lot of discrimination. So, yes, sometimes you can, if you are not too sure, don't show your fearlessness by just jumping into the situation or doing something about which you are not comfortable or you are not sure. In one sense, that also becomes what is called rash boldness. Rash, because you are not thinking about it twice. You might even be a muscle man and the other person may be even more well equipped as far as the bodily strength is concerned. All that can happen. But if your heart goes out and if you feel you should do this, then go ahead and do and then take the consequences. That also is there. You feel inwardly so much that I must help and then something boomerangs. Be ready to take consequence and learn from that. We are all learning. That's the whole thing. So fear and fearlessness, the slowly and gradually in field by field we are getting experience and we are learning how to be fearless in some field. There are so many kinds of fears we talked about. For some people till the end of life they can't get over the fear of public opinion. They just can't. They just go by what people have to say and what majority is doing. So we are really learners and we should take our time. Precaution? Yes. Why should you not take precaution? Rather than being sorry later, it's always good to take precaution. So, first it is discrimination and then it is really using any of your faculties, including this of fearlessness. Our time is up. We won't.